up your frozen dinners, grab your TV tray, and settle in for another episode of the Plus Platoon, your podcast for all things Disney Plus, brought to you by Disney Plus fans. Watch along with us every week as we cover all the new, the old, the good, and the bad on Disney Plus. So put down that remote, don't touch that dial, and welcome your fabulous Plus Platoon host.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Plus Platoon. We're a Disney Plus fan podcast that gives honest, spoiler-filled reviews of movies and shows on Disney Plus. We'll look at new releases, coming attractions, and we'll even go back into the vault to revisit some of the classic Disney that's on the platform. Make sure you're subscribed and you will never miss a moment. I'm going to bring in Kate. Kate, good to see you this evening.
I'm here and I'm ready to talk about classical music.
Yeah. Because I can tell that's your jam, Kate.
It's fine.
Yeah. Next, we got Pete. Pete, how you doing tonight?
Get the buck out of here, Kate.
Ah, that was really good.
I know why Beethoven's rolling over now. So, Steve, how you doing?
I'm doing well.
Good. Guys, if you're not already, please like, subscribe, share. We got some fun shows coming up. We got some new shows that have come out on the service lately coming up, including one that's a dive back into the vault I guarantee I've never seen in a couple weeks. And apparently it's boring because Steve's yawning. So
I don't know what you're talking about. I'm excited to find out what that is.
It's coming up in a couple weeks. So for this week, we are looking at the concert feature, also known as Fantasia from 1940. It is Fantasia's 85th anniversary, almost to the week. I believe it came out on the 13th of November in 1940. So that would be next week's show, but we are doing it this week, mainly because Fantastic Four comes out next week. So, but as we do when we do some of our big classic dives into the vault, we're doing some trivia. So,
but you gotta let me show you something first.
Okay, you can show us something.
This isn't implying that I'm gonna win the trivia because it is not. But this is showing what a Disney nerd I am. So I bought this back in the 90s. This is the Fantasia box set for the Laserdisc.
Ooh, what?
I think around the 50th, 55th, something like that. It's got a signed commemorative thing signed by Roy O. Disney.
Oh, that's so cool.
Roy E. Disney, sorry, the younger one. Yep, the younger Roy. It's a 3-disc set. And then for those youngins that don't know what Laserdiscs are, this is a Laserdisc.
A humongous DVD.
It's basically a giant DVD. It came with on 3 DVDs because the quality was so high. That are double-sided, right? So it was a half hour a side. They would record it on that level. It also comes with a book about Fantasia with all different pictures and stuff. Kate.
Did Laserdiscs come before VHSs?
No, after VHS.
No, yeah, they first came out in the late 80s, I would say.
Why do I not remember them?
Because you were not born yet.
Yes, I was in the late 80s. I was born in 88, sir. Thank you very much.
And they were big in the 90s. They were never big. But they were higher, much higher quality than VHS. And until DVD came out, this was how cinephiles would buy their movies.
That was interesting. That set would have come out in for the 50th, so the 1990.
Yeah. That set at the time probably cost me $150.
You can now buy them on eBay for as cheap as $15.
Yeah, I know. I don't think it's worth much, but
I don't even know what you play. What do you play a laser disc player?
A laser disc player,
yeah. Which I still have a functioning laser disc player.
Ow!
I haven't in a while. There's also a commemorative lithograph.
Ooh. Up.
Of an original concept painting. Up.
Oh, I'm very jealous of that. I'm very jealous of that.
So.
That's really cool.
It's a lovely set. And at the time, I was young and unencumbered by a child and was able to spend money on wasteful things like a $150 box set.
Yeah.
He says to the girl who you can clearly see the Friends Lego set and the Friends Hugsy Bedtime Penguin Pal.
As I said, Kate, if you really want one, they're $20 on eBay.
I might. Those are so
and they weren't that limited.
Yeah.
Okay, let's trivia.
I did purchase the first VHS release of this. It was actually a birthday present from me in 1991 when it first came out, which I sadly cannot find at the moment. I also have sitting over there the record set that included a booklet within attached to the records. And it was, I believe, 4 records. So
that's anyway, cool.
Let's get going on the trivia. So let's
do it.
The first question, as I said, a softball for Kate.
I'm not going to get any of these.
No, I guarantee if you don't get this one, you can walk off the stage. Okay. First one is, what color is Mickey's robe?
That one I do know.
I told you it's a softball for Kate. Oh.
Oops. Wait.
Ding.
Yes, time. And the answer is Kate. Red. Yes, it is red. You're welcome, Kate.
Red, baby.
Got him.
Okay. The next question is, and there are 13 questions, just so you are curious. No. Okay. The next question is, what is the name of the sound system Disney developed for this?
I'm going to fail this so bad.
Oh, this isn't easy, but they said it in the movie.
I think I have it right.
Did he say it at the very, very beginning in the monologue?
Probably, and you probably
yeah. I did. I watched that whole monologue. Because I kept expecting Donald to come and...
No, sorry. Donald's not in this one.
I don't have
no,
this
he
right.
Wasn't.
Okay. Sadly.
Steve, what is it?
Fanta Sound, something like that.
It is Fanta Sound.
Oh, not me putting Dolby Sound. Okay.
I said Fanta Audio.
No, it is Fanta Sound with the... Basically, it was the precursor to stereo. Gina in the background, our producer, can you keep track of who gets what how many right? So far, Steve's got 2, Pete and Kate have 1.
I have 1.
Okay. Next, we have who narrated Fantasia? And it was not originally intended for him to be the narrator, but he narrated all of the storyboard sessions and Walt liked it. So he kept him on. The correct answer. Who thinks they got it correct?
I didn't get it right.
Who is it?
Strict Deems House. Taylor.
It is Deems Taylor.
Yes. Nope.
It is Deems. Yes, that is Deems Taylor.
Oh,
yes.
I know. I'm
cheating because I pulled out my book, but that's a picture of him. If anybody's watching us on video,
so Pete, you did not have it correct.
I did not have it correct. No, I couldn't remember.
That's fine. There are some of these. There are some also about...
It doesn't help that I didn't actually watch the movie before we recorded.
Well, you've probably seen it, 10 times? Easy?
More than that, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, next is, who was the only composer alive to hear his work in this? Spoiler alert, he hated what Disney and Stokowski did to this. Or you can tell me which section it was. If you don't know who the narrator was, but you think you know which section it was, I will accept that also. But there was only one composer who was alive to hear his work in this. So it was also therefore probably the most contemporary of all of the works. Okay.
No, hold on. Hold on.
Okay.
I'm making a guess because I don't know this.
Okay.
No.
Am I allowed to show my guess?
Yeah, Pete, you can show your guess. Who we got?
I'm saying Rite of Spring. I'm saying Sorcerer Mickey.
Rite of Spring guy. So,
Rite of Spring.
Rite of Spring guy. Yes, that is correct. It is
Stokowski. Is that right? Stokowski.
Igor Stravinsky.
Stravinsky.
I'm trying to shoot the moon and get all of the answers wrong.
Well, so far you've got two right. So sorry. Yeah, Rite of Spring, right?
No, I said Sorcerer Mickey.
You said Sorcerer Mickey.
Oh, okay. Then you said Rite of Spring, but you wrote.
You have one right, though.
Pete said.
You did get one right, though.
I have only, yeah. I only have two, Kate, so.
Okay. So, yes, Stravinsky hated what they, because they rearranged it and they completely changed the orchestrations. So, he hated this. Next is, what's the name of the sorcerer?
Oh, I know this one.
That one's easy.
It's a great movie ride.
Okay, we have a Yen Sid, and a Yen Sid. Yes, it is Yen Sid.
Why is everybody else's normal and mine's backwards?
It's not.
Oh, okay. It's just my camera got it.
No, you're fine. Yeah. So, Yen Sid, it was done after Disney. You can tell the how he arches his eyebrow there at the end was very much a caricature of Walt Disney not liking when something's happening.
That's right.
Yes. Okay, next is, who was originally an option to be the Sorcerer's Apprentice that was not Mickey? There was another Disney character that was originally, it was basically a coin flip between Mickey and this other character to be the Sorcerer's Apprentice. And they went with Mickey instead of this other character.
I'm going to be wrong on this, but
I'm stuck between two. Can I put two? I'm putting
you
two.
Put two if you want to. I'd curious if you get either one of them right, but
probably not.
Steve, do you think you know it?
No, I'm taking a guess.
Okay, Steve, who's your guess? Actually, Kate, who's your guess?
I had Donald / Pete.
Incorrect.
Steve, I'm going with Donald.
Not Donald.
I said Goofy.
It's not Goofy. The other option was Dopey.
Oh, that would have been terrible.
Oh, that would have been cute.
No, because you don't want to see Dopey be abused for 10 minutes.
I don't particularly like watching Mickey be abused for 10 minutes, but...
Yeah, that's fair.
He brought it on himself. He made choices.
Okay,
this is true.
Next is...
Coming from one of the resident teachers in the group.
Which Roman god of excess is portrayed in the Pastoral Symphony, and they say his name 3 times in the movie? And he is Roman. Because Disney played very fast and loose with who was Greek and who was Roman within this movie. Because so
I know this one, and I have to tell a story about this one.
I know the Greek version.
I only know it because Derek told me earlier.
I did tell you earlier. Yes, and thank you for paying attention. So it is Kate has Bacchus, Pete has Bacchus, Steve has.
I don't know.
I don't know. Yes, it is Bacchus.
I only know that because, well, Derek, can I tell them why you told me?
Absolutely.
Because I messaged Derek while I was watching this, and I was like, did they base the Ghost of Christmas Present in Muppet's Christmas Carol off of this character?
Somewhat loosely, yes.
And then that was how. Because if you look, like, they're decorated the same. Anyway.
So I have to tell this story real quick. We used to host a wine tour every fall from our house. We have a wine region here in Buffalo, believe it or not. And we called it the Bacchus Bus because of this movie. So we get a group of friends together, go out and get drunk and be on a bus so nobody had to drive.
That's fair.
Nice.
Okay, so we are halfway through, and Steve, I think you're at what, 3, maybe?
1, 2, 3, 4.
Steve's at 5. Pete is at 3. Kate is at 3. So
I got Steve at 6 and me at 4. What did I go wrong? I don't know.
I'm 5.
Okay. Gina has 5, 3, and 3. So that's where we're at. So, okay. Next is, which are two types of animals that are the featured dancers in Dance of the Hours? Dance of the Hours, of course, is the one that is apparently the most popular ballet ever, which in the 40s it might have been. Now I would argue Swan Lake. But which two animals are the featured dancers? In other words, which are the two that dance?
The ones that do the solo.
The solo at the end, near the end, yes. Which two do the solo?
Ow. Sorry.
Hair near the end. And if you are close, one of them is definite. One of them could go one of two potential answers. So
Mm-hmm.
You have a hippo, an ostrich, a hippo, and a croc, and Steve.
Alligator and elephant.
Alligator and elephant. I'm going to give this one to Pete. It is a hippo and a either crocodile or alligator, depending on which one you use.
But what about the ostriches?
They're at the beginning, and it's a group, and there's not actually ever two animals dancing together as they run off.
I have beef with this answer because the ostriches are featured in several Disney parades, as are the hippos. Here. Are the crocs?
In Dance of the Hours, in Fantasia, Kate, no. So
I know it's an alligator because I read there's actually a name for them.
Yeah.
And it's an alligator. I couldn't remember if it was the elephant or the hippo.
But yeah, it's the alligators and the gators and the hippos. So I will give that one to Pete. Kate, you can get over yourself. So
and the croc was in the parade too.
Yes, and actually
the alligator.
Actually, in the original Main Street Electrical Parade, Fantasia had a float with all of these animals on them. So anyway. Next question is, who voiced Mickey Mouse in this movie? Ooh. Mickey has one set of lines. He comes up and talks to Stokowski after Sorcerer's Apprentice, says, talks to Stokowski and then runs off the stage, basically. So who voiced Mickey Mouse in this movie? Kate's got Walt Disney. Pete's got Walt Disney and Steve
Disney
has Walt Disney. Yes, this is the only feature film in which Mickey Mouse is voiced by Walt Disney. This was actually one of the last things that Disney ever voiced Mickey Mouse in. So
he wasn't by that point, he wasn't doing it in the cartoons anymore.
No, he was not, but he did still do it in the movie, in this movie.
Yeah.
And I believe he still did it in Fun and Fancy Free, a couple of the movies after World War II. But
who took over after Walt?
I don't remember, to be perfectly honest.
Was there a person in between Walt and Wayne?
Yes.
Yes, definitely.
Curious.
Okay. We got four shots left. Next question is, which Disneyland attraction has a section directly inspired by a segment of this movie?
Disneyland, not World?
Land. There is a Disneyland attraction that has one of its sections directly inspired by a segment of this movie. And Gina knew this one immediately because it is, if you've been to Disneyland, and Kate, this is one where I'm sorry, this is not fair to you, but I don't really care because it's
for the audience too, people out there. Let us know. Shout really loud. Maybe we can hear you.
Is this something that is also at World, but...
The attraction is at World, yes. Basically, yes.
No, it's not named the same, though.
No, it's not named the same.
Oh, well, that takes that guess out.
Steve, I will give you the first guess as our Disneyland, the Disneyland Railroad. Pete, you have the Disneyland Railroad. Kate, you have...
Hold on.
No, you do not always have the Disneyland, also Disneyland Railroad. No, nice try. It is the Disneyland Railroad. The Primeval World section is directly inspired by the Rite of Spring section in Fantasia.
Yes.
Almost to the point of it's a little creepy.
Would it have counted if we said Ellen's Energy Adventure?
Would it have counted if I had said Fantasmic?
No.
Because Chernabog, like that whole song,
is
what I fight, Mickey. Okay. All
right. Three questions left. Here we go. Next, we have which segment was also included in Fantasia 2000?
Oh, that's easy.
Yeah, it is easy. One section of this was also included in Fantasia 2000 to go along with the other sections, and that was actually part of Walt's original idea, was that they would include some of the past sections and bring in some new ones, and it would be kind of like a mishmash rotation was the original idea of Fantasia. And, you know, in 5 years it would come out with a different program, and then in a couple years after that it would come out with a different program, have some of the originals, have some of the old ones.
I do not know the answer to this one. I'm guessing.
Pete, which segment was also included in Fantasia 2000?
That would be the Sorcerer's Apprentice.
It would be the Sorcerer's Apprentice. Correct.
That's what I put.
Yes. Yep, all of you got it correct.
I now have 5 points, everybody.
Yay.
Yeah. Oh, my cat's driving me crazy here.
Two questions left.
Which is what happens when I go away for a week.
Which orchestra recorded the majority of this movie?
Oh.
And knowing that Sikowski is the one who directed it could be a clue, but this is truly either a you know it or you don't, and it is not the Walt Disney Symphony Orchestra. So
this is a guess.
Okay. It is from a city in the United States.
Los Angeles Philharmonic.
You have Los Angeles. Pete has Philadelphia.
I have New York. I have New York Philharmonic.
New York. Steve has Philadelphia. Steve is correct. It is the Philadelphia Philharmonic.
Hey, Steve.
Except for Steve, which
I don't know which
did not record.
I don't know which one.
They did not record Sorcerer's Apprentice.
Okay.
Sorcerer's Apprentice was actually done by studio artists at Disney. Okay. We got one question left, and this is the one that you're either going to know or you're not going to have a clue, but I might have been able to give you something. So, which Spanish painter was in talks to do a segment before World War II? And Spanish painter is your clue on this one, because, and he actually has a hotel tower named after one of his works at Walt Disney World, including the segment where they were, the segment that they were originally going to do, they actually did, and they show it in the lobby of one of the hotels at Walt Disney World, and they named the tower after the painting that it was all based on. So,
yeah, and it's on Disney Plus if you ever want to see it.
Yes, it is also on Disney Plus. So, Pete, the Spanish painter is,
that'd be Salvador Dali.
I'm not sure I spelled it right. It would be Salvador Dali. Yes, he was originally in talks.
Yes,
before World War II, it just didn't come about. But he did eventually have. They did eventually animate it. So, Gina, I'm going to pull you in. Who do we got in third place?
Kate with 6 points. Yay!
Nice. Second place.
Not much ahead of that.
Pete with 8 points. Or 8 points.
Woo!
9 points.
The biggest loser.
And Steve wins with 10 points.
Yay! Okay, thank you, Gina.
All at B+ from Steve.
10 out of 13. Yeah, that's not bad. So anyway, okay. Now what we're going to do is we're going to go through the movie and we're going to talk about each section individually and kind of what we liked about it, what we didn't like about it, what worked, it, what didn't work. So our first section is the Toccata and Fugue in D minor by Johann Sebastian Bach. And Steve, I'm going to let you start off on this one because you said you had thoughts.
It is such a weak start to what this movie was supposed to be. Like, it went on for a long time. Like, I'm thinking, if I didn't know what this movie was about going in, I would probably be ready to turn it off. It did not keep my interest at all. It was just... Yeah, I liked the music piece, but it's just the animation was boring me. I got bored really quickly.
I'm gonna second you on all of that. I understand why they let off with that piece because it's a piece that people would recognize, but after about the first 5 seconds, it just kind of grows dull. So
yes,
Kate, Pete, anything to add on that?
No, I second it.
Okay. Yeah. He broke the rule of cinema and a lot of entertainment is you start strong and you end strong.
And he broke both rules in my
broke
opinion.
Both rules on this movie, yes. But especially the start strong. That it's the weakest segment for sure.
Weak maybe. Worst segment, I would argue not. But we'll get there. Kate? Next section we have is the Nutcracker by Tchaikovsky. There was no Nutcracker in this at all. So what are your thoughts on the Nutcracker segment?
So I want to preface all of this by saying this is a hard movie to watch if you're not in the mood to watch it. Or if you're not in the mood to listen to classical music. Can confirm. I was not in the mood to watch this movie when I watched it. However, this was one section that I actually really enjoyed.
Is this the first time you've seen it?
No, I watched it a lot when I was a kid.
Okay.
I had it on VHS. And this was one part that I remembered because I loved Dance of the Sugar Plum Fairies. I and the fairies fly in and then they do the little dewdrops on the spider web. I remember watching that as a kid and just being like, that is so beautiful. Like, so I would replay that part. The little mushrooms dancing will always just, it's just so cute. I just can't. And now the Nutcracker, the ballet, the Nutcracker is probably my favorite ballet. You know, that's really like cliche. It's also, yeah, but I really liked this part. It held my attention. I also really like the music to Nutcracker. So, yeah, I liked it. The fish part, but the, yeah. So, Pete, what do you think?
So, I think this is what they should have started with. I would agree with it. There's parts of it. There's parts of it they probably could have cut, but there's some stunning animation in here. It's something a lot of people are today even are familiar with. So I imagine back then it was something that most people were familiar with. You know, it's a kind of a perennial Christmas ballet. And so I don't think this is my favorite segment, but it would have been such a strong opening. I wonder if the movie would have succeeded better if it had kicked off with this.
And Pete, that brings up another point where this movie was not financially successful at all, mainly because they started it and they all of a sudden could not get Asia and could not get Europe. Because it came out in 1940, so they lost lots of money on this movie. It did not break even. I think, Pete, what you talk about as far as visually stunning, I think this is probably the best example of all of the different Disney techniques that Disney could do in 1940.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, especially the Arabian Dance with the goldfish with the translucent tails.
Oh, that was cool. Across. Yes.
I think visually this is, and as you said, Kate, Hoplow, the little mushroom. And while, you know, not exactly culturally appropriate, it is it is technically the quote Chinese dance,
right?
So you also guys have to remember this was 1940, so there were things in this that would not necessarily be appropriate today, including one we'll talk about later that they did actually cut from this. But I think musically I liked it. Visually, I would say, as a group, this is probably the most visually stunning.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, okay. Our next section is The Sorcerer's Apprentice. And I have got to give this one to our resident Sorcerer Mickey.
I love. This is so classic. It is so classic Disney. It is Mickey Mouse just at his finest with just trying so hard and messing up and just being so lovable. And oh my gosh, I had all of the feels while watching this one. That was always my dream. That was the one role that I wish I could have done at Disney was Sorcerer Mickey in Fantasmic. That was the one role that I didn't get to do.
Okay.
I was close to Mickey in Fantasmic, but not Sorcerer Mickey.
You tailor things, didn't you?
I was the brave little tailor Mickey. Yeah. So,
and it's not the same Mickey.
So it's so classic Disney. Like when you think classic Disney, this is what comes to mind. And the song is so like, oh, and of course I automatically get thrown into the Great Movie Ride when you're coming around and you look like you're in the Twister and you've got Mickey going like this with the water. And, Oh, it's just so good. This held my attention the whole time. I could watch this segment over and over. So, Pete, what do you think?
It's hard to believe how influential this was on Disney as a corporation when you think about the hat alone and what that has represented over the years. And
we
ignore
the hat at Hollywood Studios for the time being, please.
Well, yeah, the BAH, we'll not talk about that. But the I'm just saying, like, there's Christmas ornaments and there's decorations and there's people wearing these hats on their heads and everything, and it's all from this like 8-minute segment from this movie. Yep. That really perpetuated because it was so good that it outgrew the movie. So see you.
Yeah. Same thing. I use this as a writing activity in my class. So I have them just listen to the music first and then write a story that matches the music. And then I turn and show my students this and how a story is told through the music. So very classic.
Yeah. And this was actually what started the idea of Fantasia. Is they wanted to do Disney Mickey as a Sorcerer's Apprentice short, and it got way too expensive. And they finally decided, hey, let's put it into this concert feature and help justify at least some of the cost. But Sorcerer's Apprentice is what started the idea of the concert feature. Now, we're going to ignore that it's the lowest person on the totem pole causing thousands of dollars worth of damage and having to get bailed out by his boss. But, Pete, you said this is classic Disney. When you think of classic Mickey Mouse, it's this. When you think of classic other characters, it's different things. Classic Donald, I always think Donald versus Chip and Dale is classic Donald. Goofy is the how-to videos. But this is classic Mickey. This is the Mickey Mouse that everyone thinks of. So, okay. Our next section is the previously mentioned Rite of Spring. And Heat, what are your thoughts on Rite of Spring?
This is a case where the music is good. I think it kind of just drags too much. It's very slow moving. I enjoy parts of the animation. But the idea of telling the story of the evolution of the Earth, set to music, I guess is a good thing, but like it just doesn't quite work as keeping your attention. I find this one the one that I'm most likely to be like distracted by my phone for. As you said, this one did inspire diorama on the Disney World, Disneyland Railroad. There Correct. Was a scene in Ellen's Energy Adventure that was also inspired by the dinosaurs fighting here. It was inspired by the Disney Disneyland Railroad, which came from this. But it's that one little segment. I think I remember watching, Wonderful World of Disney. They would show like just that segment of this.
Yeah.
Yeah. But overall, it's too long, too draggy. It's not one of my favorites. So, and Steven or anybody else?
I think coming off of Sorcerer's Apprentice to this is such a huge shift. Like you had this really high note and then it was like this huge drop.
Agreed.
And by huge, we mean 25 minutes.
Yeah,
this was the one with the dinosaurs, right?
Yes. This is the one with the dinosaurs. The reason they did the great big drought at the end is because at that point no one knew about the asteroid that actually came in. So that's why they did the drought instead of some kind of an asteroid coming in, is because in 1940 they had no idea that it was actually an asteroid that helped kill the dinosaurs.
That's awesome.
So, this is my by far weakest section of this movie. I would say this is so much. This is, I'll be perfectly honest, this is the section I skipped when I was watching it. Mm-hmm. This is weaker to me than Toccata and Fugue.
I can see that because at least Toccata and Fugue is shorter.
Yes. Yeah. So, okay. Then we have an intermission. Then we have the soundtrack section, which is just kind of fun. Then we get to Beethoven's Pastoral Symphony. Interestingly about this section, this is the section Stokowski hated what Disney was doing with the visuals on this. Stokowski said, no, this is not mythology. This needs to be like farming scenes and that kind of stuff. And what are you talking about with centaurs? No. This is also the one that has the section that had the most racially inappropriate section of Fantasia in the original version. Because in this version, you'll see one, there's a centaurette that has like her foot up and she's fixing her hair. What you don't see is if it had zoomed out to the actual full cell that was animated is a little black centaur polishing her hoof. And is not great. But, and Kate actually mentioned something on this. When the centaurettes come up out of the water, they don't have any tops on. But this is one where Walt actually said, is this going to be a problem? Are people, and Stokowski actually came in and told him, no, people are going to realize it's art. People are going to realize it's for this. It's not lewd. Go ahead and leave it in. You're fine. And he must have said the same thing on Night on Battled Mountain, but we'll get there. But to me, this section works. The section, they could have cut it down a little bit. I also think they had too much going on in this section. Too many different mini stories they tried to tell. I would like them to either stick with just the Pegasus or stick with just the centaurs. The Bacchus section didn't work for me at all. Let alone a Greek god being handed thunderbolts by a Roman blacksmith. I mean, yeah, they played very fast and loose with who was Greek and who was Roman in this one. But this section was okay. Yeah, this section's kind of one of my middle. It's fine. I'll watch it. It's not great. So, anything else to add, Kate, Pete?
No, Steve? I think you said it all.
I think I like this one a little more than you do. I kind of enjoy... all of the longer ones like this do drag at times, but I find the opposite of what you said is that there's a lot of stuff thrown in there, so it holds my attention better than some of the other longer ones like Rite of Spring does. And even the Nutcracker Suite, I think I like this one a little bit better, even though, as I said, the Nutcracker Suite is visually so beautiful.
I would like I agree. I like the storytelling in this better than the storytelling in Nutcracker. I would agree with you on that one, Pete.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay. Next section is then the Dance of the Hours. Dance of the Hours was, as I said earlier, supposed to be apparently the most popular ballet back in 1940. Apparently it was. Pete, I'll let you start off on this one and then. Yeah, I've got some stuff to say about this one. So, Pete, thoughts on Dance of the Hours?
This is the second best for me after Sorcerer's Apprentice. It's fairly tight. It's a lot of fun with the different animals. It's the most, again, other than Sorcerer's Apprentice, it's the closest to like a Disney short feel that you get. I mean, Disney was doing a lot of, you know, they had their regular cartoon, then they had the Merry Melodies.
Try again, Pete.
Not the Merry Melodies.
Silly Symphonies.
Silly Symphonies. Sorry, Merry Melodies is the other guys.
Yeah.
So Silly Symphonies. And so they did this type of thing quite a bit, but I don't think they ever did it much better than this. So it was a lot of fun. The idea of having like hippos and, you know, ostriches and a alligator as the lead dancer. Lead male,
yeah
as the lead male dancer. So I really always enjoy this one, and definitely, as I said, I think number two for me. So anyone else?
I agree. No. For me, Sorcerer's Apprentice and this one are probably equally matched for me. I remember watching this, seeing clips of this all the time as a kid.
Yeah. And to me, this is over Sorcerer's Apprentice just because of some of the comedy in it. And it just, I loved how Deems Taylor, his introduction was so straight.
Right.
How it's these dancers do this and the dancers are going to do this and the men in black, the dancers in black are going to come in and do this. And then all of a sudden you see, and it starts with ostriches.
Yeah.
And just, this is what in Fantasia 2000, they tried to do with the flamingos and the yo-yo, and it didn't do it as well.
It didn't work, no.
Yeah. So, yeah, to me, this is my favorite. And I don't know about you, but I can't help but hear just a little bit of the Hello Mudda, Hello Fada part. Okay, Kate. Hello Mudda, Hello Fada.
I know what it is, smarty pants.
Well, it's not just pants that are smart. So, okay. Then to wrap up these sections, we have Night on Bell Mountain by Mussorgsky and Ave Maria as a compare contrast type thing. Steve, thoughts on this section?
For Disney, this is so like dark. I mean, I was watching it and it does not have much of a story. It's this Chernabog sitting on the top of a mountain and thinking it's just not a lot going on. And then it's a nice switch. I did like that. I did read about the one long scene where they pan out how it actually had been done three times. The first time their pane broke. And then the next time they try, there was an earthquake. So it took them three shots.
And that was that was the most expensive shot in the entire thing.
I mean, some of it is visually stunning. And then just how Chernabog has stayed around. Like, if you're a Disney fan, you know about Chernabog. So, and then as reading stuff.
He was in Spectro.
Uh-huh.
Okay, guys, those of you who don't know, Chernabog is the devil character that's on the top of the mountain. So I know everyone on here knows that. The
music is used in Fantasmic. Because that's what I fought the dragon to.
So,
yep.
So not my favorite, but like I think at the time, just had to be visually stunning. And creepy.
Yes. And Steve, how you do Sorcerer's Apprentice as far as a writing activity, I do Not a Bald Mountain with my kids as far as give me adjectives to describe that music and then, okay, now watch it and see if the adjectives fit. This is realistically the music in this was in Fantasy in the Sky. The music from this was in Wishes. The music from this was in Enchantment, the 50th anniversary one. The only one recently it hasn't been in has been Happily Ever After. So it's oh, now, it was in a little bit. Now, although the primary one they used from this in Enchantment was Sorcerer's Apprentice.
Yeah, they use this in Hallowishes too, don't they? Is it still called Hallowishes? The Halloween fireworks?
You're asking the wrong guy on that one, to be perfectly honest. You're asking the teacher who can only go in the summer or spring break.
So, well, you're asking the guy that's too cheap to spend that much money on a Halloween party, so.
This is fair. So, all right. So
let's live in California.
We've now talked about all the different sections of this movie. And Steve, I will say the Ave Maria section for me is probably, it's honestly, I usually like skip that section. I stop it at the end of Night on Bound Mountain just because I get what they were trying to do with the contrast and the Ave Maria. It's something popular for people to go out on. I'll be perfectly honest, it put me to sleep this afternoon.
And it's a lovely use of the multiplane camera.
Yes.
Right.
But it's boring.
And yes.
Yep.
Yeah.
It goes in and out and in. It's like when they were doing, hey, we've got this new tool. Let's use it.
Very boring.
Yes.
Yeah.
And yeah. That's another Maria. I love that.
Maria, not the Night on Bald Mountain. So, okay.
Yeah. And again, I think on the old Disney show, they would show the Night on Bald Mountain part and cut Ave Maria.
Yes. Yeah. So This movie's 2 hours and 5 minutes, 5 to 8 minutes long, including all the different narrations. That's without the true 15-minute intermission, but they include the little intermission slide in there. Does this movie work overall as a movie, Kate?
Yeah, I think, but you have to be in the mood for it. Because I liked this movie a lot when I was a kid. I was always drawn to music. So I remember liking parts of it. I think that the idea of this movie, kind of what he talks about in the beginning when he's like, some of it is just colors and some of it has a storyline. I think it's really beautiful art. But for me, I have to be in the mood to watch it. But yeah, I think it works. Pete, what about you?
Yeah, it's more intellectually fascinating than entertaining at times, if that makes sense. It's like I get what they were trying to do. It was wildly ambitious for its time, and honestly for any time, because could you imagine like
this now?
DreamWorks going like, hey, we're not going to make another Shrek movie. We're going to make this movie with a bunch of classical music and just have images. So, I mean, it's really impressive. It's so hard to say. It's wonderful as an academic, like, animation piece, but I'm not sure it's a very good movie because it's too long. It would be really hard to sit through in the theater. I mean, this movie gained popularity in the 60s when people started like doing drugs to it, right? Because they would go in and I mean, that's when this movie turned a profit, was in the 60s, because they'd re-release it like they did all their other movies. And the first couple re-releases didn't do very well. And then all of a sudden you had a generation that wanted to get high and went in there and went, whoa, look at the colors. So, you know, the imagery is really amazing, but I don't know. It's more of a, as I said, more of a field trip than it is a movie. So that's not to say I'm going to rate it badly, but Steve?
I think, like, I don't know if it's you or Kate, but it's sort of like it's this art piece and it has some really strong points and some points, I guess, doesn't hit home for me. And I'm wondering if they had put things in a different order, how that would impact it, like start off with a stronger piece, not so boring piece. So it does work. I mean, it's considered one of the best, you know, I know it's in the top 100. So Derek?
I think it works if you can sit and watch individual sections that you want to watch and skip other sections, to be perfectly honest. There are sections of this that if they are on, I will absolutely watch them. There are sections of this that if they are on, if I don't have to watch it for this program, I'm probably only watching about half this movie.
It doesn't work as a movie.
No, it doesn't work as a full movie, to be perfect. Yeah, it doesn't. I understand what they were trying to do. And back then, sitting in concert halls for 2 hours was more common.
Yeah,
I guess because people were still going and listening to concerts. Which people don't really go do sit and listen to classical concerts now. So as a full movie, no, to me it doesn't work. It's too long. So, okay, guys, any other comments, thoughts on Fantasia?
How different is Fantasia 2000?
Incredibly, incredibly different.
I don't think I've ever seen Fantasia 2000.
That may be a solved at some point at a later date.
Oh, goody.
Are we allowed to say our opinions of Fantasia 2000?
We can, sure.
It's hit and miss like this is.
Yeah, I would agree.
There's some good parts to it, and there's some
really not good parts to it.
Yeah, there's three or four good parts. I would say
I would say it's more hit than miss.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not, I mean, if there's, I don't know, either if there's, let's say if there's seven sections, four of them hit, three of them miss type thing.
Yeah.
So I can think of,
I just keep thinking about the space whales and they're such a big miss.
Yeah.
That I can't get past that in my brain.
Okay. Fair enough.
So I like the United commercial one though.
Yeah. So guys, as we always do, we do Cups of Pixie Dust out of 5, 4, Fantasia, 1940, 80th anniversary, 85th anniversary. Kate, what are you giving Fantasia?
I'm going to give it a 2. I'm going to give it a 2.
Okay.
Pete?
So I have a daughter. I love animation. I have a daughter who has gone into animation. I don't know how much of that was influenced by me. Even for the flaws of this movie, and there are many, I cannot give this movie less than a 4. It's amazing that it ever got made. There's amazing stuff throughout it, and the ambition of it, and everything like that. I just, even though it's not a movie I'm gonna watch a lot, I just think there's brilliance in here, and there's enough that I got to give it a 4. So I'll probably be way out, an outlier on that. But
Steve,
this is where I've struggled all day because I'm torn between what Kate is saying and what Pete is saying of overall. It's nothing I'm going to watch again, but I can look at it and see the amazement that's there.
Luckily, there's a number that's right in between me and
but even then, I feel like that's so easy for you. But I feel like what I've given 3s to other things, so I feel the same way.
Which includes Pete's Dragon, Treasure Island, and Escape to Witch Mountain.
Mm. Oh, God, this is better than all. Wait.
I know, but... Okay, it is an amazing film and it has its merits. And hear what Pete's saying, but I have to go with 2.5. That's why I've been sort of stuck at there. If I pull out individual pieces, I would give it higher scores. But overall, 2.5.
Okay. I'm going to go with 3.5. I'm more along the line of Pete's of
me and Derek. Wow.
There are definite sections of this that there is more of this that I would watch again than I would not. And there are times that I will go out and I will pull out sections just because I want to watch them. Just randomly. Now, will I watch this whole thing again? No, but there are enough of those sections that I can give a 4 or 4.5 to that outbalance to me the 1.5 and 2 sections. So, I mean,
wow. It's not very often that I am the lowest one.
You're not by far the lowest.
Well, okay.
You are the lowest. Yes. You are the lowest, yeah.
Okay, Kate, but on your scale of 2s, this or Pete's Dragon?
This. Okay. Yeah, probably
the entire entire movie or Pete's Dragon?
Oh, God.
Okay.
I don't know.
Kate, what have we got going for Disney Plus news?
Only one thing for Disney Plus news. The new Prep and Landing special will come to Disney Plus on November 28th, the day after the Disney Channel premiere.
I love the Prep and Landing stuff. It's fun. They're Disney shorts. It's the elves that are the spies.
There were 2 of them, right, already?
2 of them. The second one has Betty White as Mrs. Claus, which is...
I don't think I've ever seen the second one.
Second one, they're going after stealing a toy from Santa's workshop.
Okay.
But they're fun to watch. I watch them every year just as those are kind of cool and kind of cute. So I will definitely be watching this one. So that's what we got for Disney Plus news this week. Next week, we are diving back into the Marvelverse and going with the Fantastic Four, new steps or new beginnings or new horizons or
baby steps
or same old, or, you know, trying to save the MCU or whatever they're calling it. So,
first family of Marvel.
Yeah,
no, that was their name back in the day.
Right. First family of Marvel. Oh, I know. I'm just, I can't wait to watch the Jetsons. Anyway.
But don't worry, eventually they'll make that.
But they are making it, unfortunately, I think. So
yes.
yeah. So next week's gonna be Fantastic Four. But guys, we've got some spots coming up in December and definitely into next year, because not much came out in the theaters this fall, so nothing's gonna come out into the new movies are gonna come out in Disney Plus next spring. So what do you want us to watch? Send us suggestions at plusplatoon@gmail.com. Message us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, anywhere, X, anywhere you can get a hold of us. We have new shows coming out every Thursday on YouTube and all the major podcasting services. For Kate, Pete, and Steve, we've got Gina, and as our producer, we will see everyone next week. Bye, guys.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for watching this week's episode of the Plus Platoon. Be sure to subscribe to the Plus Platoon podcast to keep getting great content each week. Then head over to Apple Podcasts and leave those 5-star reviews, as they help make the Plus Platoon visible to even more Disney Plus fans. Also, go to YouTube and like and subscribe to the Plus Platoon channel, where you can watch all future episodes live. If you have a question for the Plus Platoon, please send us an email to plusplatoon@gmail.com or connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram at Plus Platoon.
The Plus Platoon is a Disney Plus fan podcast and is not affiliated with the Walt Disney Company or the Disney Plus streaming service. All opinions expressed on the show are solely those of the individual hosts and in no way reflect the views of the Walt Disney Company.
Thanks for watching, and be sure to stay tuned for next week's episode, because the Plus Platoon is to be continued.